Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
We actually had you on before, as a matter of fact, talking about one of your Shane Scully books. In fact, I think it was the first one you ever wrote, and that's become a very successful line you got going.
It has. I've written seven of them. I think my eighth one comes out in January.
That's something that people look forward to. In fact, my mom yesterday was at the pool reading your book. Again, I was actually the second time I read it at first sight. And she said to me, oh, I read all his books. They're great.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that.
But I told her this was not a Shane Scully book. It's a completely different type of thing. Why the departure in the middle of the series?
Well, you know, when you do a series character, you have certain parameters that you have to stay inside of. And that's, you know, I certainly am comfortable doing that. I mean, all the television I did over the years, I mean, Rockford, I couldn't have him commit an unrepentant murder. I couldn't do, you know, I mean, you have these certain rules that you have to protect these characters at all costs. But when you're doing a standalone novel, you're completely free to tell the story in any way you want to tell it. And so occasionally, just to keep yourself fresh, it's a good idea to write outside the series. If you look at most writers who do a series, they will occasionally write a standalone just to, you know, loosen things up in their head, because then when you go back to your series, you find that you're much fresher and you're doing it, you know, in a much more creative fashion, and you're not just settling into a rut that you sometimes can with a series. So, you know, that's why I did it. The other reason I did it was that I was actually acting on a movie. I wrote about this in the front of the book, and it was a Steven Seagal film, and I was in Germany for a month on this movie, and Germany in November can be pretty bleak, and I took a bunch of novels by favorite authors of mine, among them one by Andrew Klavan called Man and Wife, which I really liked, and it was a very unique tale told from a unique perspective, and it kind of got me to thinking, you know, I really need to stretch my own writing talents and try and do something that's a little different, and this book I had actually pitched to another publisher at the beginning of my career, and they begged me not to write it. So I figured if I was going to try something different, this was the one to do.
I love it. And it's not a whodunit. It's a thriller, and it's very interestingly done. One of the things I thought was really interesting was the point of view of the voices doing it. You have the narrator, who is the internet millionaire chick Bess, and you have another narrator who is one of the targets of his love. And then the other third person narrator. It's a very interesting way to tell the story.
Well, it was. I you know, Chick is at the beginning, he's very charming when he tells his narration at the first quarter of the novel, and he's a dot-com millionaire who's basically on the verge of bankruptcy. His company is going broke. His trophy wife Evelyn from Beverly, they live in Beverly Hills. She's killing him with the black Amex car. She's having an affair with her trainer. His 16-year-old daughter has a crystal meth problem and hates him. And he's in Hawaii with his family for his annual Hawaiian vacation on Maui in the Four Seasons Hotel. And he's down by the pool, and out of the pool comes this goddess that's half his age. She's 55 in the middle of a midlife crisis. And it's love at first sight. And he is determined to possess this woman at all costs. And it doesn't matter to him that she's happily married. Her husband is loaded with the milk of human kindness, is a millionaire from Los Angeles, looks like Brad Pitt. None of this stuff bothers him at all. He is determined to go forward and possess this woman obsessively. And this obsession starts to produce criminal murders. And so at the beginning of the novel, I'm in his voice telling the story, and he's very charming and funny, and you sort of feel sorry for him and like him, but then he starts saying things that you think, my gosh, why would he say that? And then after he commits the first murder, which is her husband, Chandler, then I switch over into two points of view. I write from his eye narrative, alternating chapters with her in third person. And then, so that we can start to hear her grief and realize that she's a much different woman on the inside than he sees her as from the outside.
Absolutely, and of course we also see what he's thinking and what she's thinking, and they're diametrically opposed.
Yeah, it's complete. I mean, you know, he thinks he's got these fantasy obsessive thoughts, and she's just completely only wrapped up in the grief over the loss of her husband, could care less about him.
Yeah, in fact, she doesn't like him too much, but with some of the things he's doing and saying, he doesn't realize that, and
he just charges on, you know. And then the third section of the book, I switch over and I'm in her eye narrative and in his third person, which brings her closer to the reader. And then the end of the novel is in her eye narrative. She's the storyteller, and she's the ultimate hero of the book, and he's the ultimate heavy in the novel. And so they kind of trade places, which I thought was a really interesting, way to write the book, and I thought it worked for me really well.
Well, it worked for me really well, too, as I read the whole thing. I very rarely read books when I'm doing interviews, but I got carried away. I read the whole thing, and then I ended up reading it again, and I really enjoyed it. One of the things I thought was interesting, too, was the character. We're talking about Paige Ellis, the girl that he had the crush on, and her husband Chandler Ellis. He's a fictional character, but based on a true family in L.A., the Chandler family. What was their reaction to this book? Did they have anything? Did they mind you using
their
name?
Well, I actually do know some members of that family, and I told them at a Christmas party last year that I had done this. And they said, oh, we can hardly wait to read it. Obviously I treat the Chandler family with great respect. They are an iconic family here in Los Angeles. They, Dorothy Chandler built the Music Center, which is our big theatrical venue in Los Angeles. They own the LA Times, a Tribune company. They were a huge family that had made a major contribution to California and Southern California life, styles. And so I treat them with great respect. I created a fictional side of the family, the Ellises, who are the cousins, and Chandler, who's named after the family. He's Chandler Ellis. But he is I always feel if you treat real entities in a respectful way and don't say negative things about them, they have nothing to complain about, and I certainly do that with the Chandler family.
No, I think it's a really good book, and people out there, if you're looking for some beach reading, this is the perfect beach novel. Stephen J. Cannell's At First Sight. It's a novel of obsession, and it's published by Vanguard Press, available everywhere. And I got to say, I really, really enjoyed it, and I couldn't wait to finish it. I got involved with the characters. That's what a good book is about, when you can't put it down because you want to know what's going to happen next.
Well, thank you, Mark. I mean, and again, for me, if the book flew out of me, which is always a good sign. I wrote it very quickly, and I've always felt that when I write the quickest, I'm usually writing the best. So if that's any marker for, the quality of this novel, it certainly for me was a very easy book to write, which means that the characters weren't fighting me, that they were coming right out of my head onto the page.
Now, one of the things you mentioned, you didn't mention, I'm mentioning it now, but Chandler Ellis, the character, is an heir to a large amount of money, and he takes all his money and puts it toward helping learning disabled children, which is a wonderful thing, and it helps define his character. But I understand that you yourself are dyslexic. Is that true?
Yeah, I have severe learning differences, and they gave me amazing problems all through school. And, I flunked 3 grades before I got out of high school. I actually made one of those up, but I graduated 2 grades behind my original class. My wife, she was my 8th grade sweetheart. I was actually a couple of grades ahead of her, but flunked my way down into her class as I was going along. But it's something I'm very familiar with. I understand the pain of that situation, not knowing why you can't compete, why you can't stay up with your classmates, so I chose something that I'm very familiar with to write about for Chandler. And Chandler has given, as you say, his money to this foundation that he manages, which is basically doing research on this condition.
It's very interesting that you chose that. One of the things that I did is I went to undergraduate at Curry College in Milton, Massachusetts, which is one of the largest centers for learning disabilities, actually. And I met a lot of kids for the first time. I had never heard of it before, dyslexia, who had such a hard time getting through school, and they were really bright people who have gone on to incredible careers. But they had a difficulty, and the school helped them with that problem.
Well, and now we're so much more aware of it than we were when I was in school, where there was no isolated condition known as dyslexia. And we're now very aware of it as a condition. And so a lot of good work is being done. I'm very involved with Bennett and Sally Shaywitz, who run the Learning Center at Yale University, and have been doing amazing good work in finding out things about this condition.
Now, some of the stuff you've done in the past, your TV shows were some of my favorite shows. Are you getting involved at all in TV again?
Well, you know, I did over 43 or 42 shows, I guess it was, and you know, so I felt I'd sort of been at that dance. I've subsequently, just last year, I sold a concept to NBC for a new series, which I'm in the midst now of developing. Whether it gets on the air, we'll see. But I'm really very devoted to writing these novels now, and I'm doing some movies. We're doing The A-Team as a movie at 20th Century Fox. John Singleton's directing, and I'm doing Greatest American Hero through my own studio, and 21 Jump Street we're doing at Sony Pictures as a feature film. So those are great. I'm making some low budget movies myself through my own studio. So, you know, I'm having a lot of fun doing that, and I don't know that, I mean, when you do a television series, you really have to marry it. It's a 7 day a week job, and
sure.
I don't want to give up these other things that I'm doing. So if this series gets on the air, I'm going to have somebody that's really good working with me that can basically be the showrunner.
Well, talking about film, any chance of the Shane Scully series or At First Sight ending up on film under your direction?
There is always that chance. You know, Shane Scully, I've had a lot of interest in. We'll see what happens with it. By the way, I have not given up on this guy. I've got a new Shane Scully coming out in January and just getting ready to write another one. So, and I just signed a new two-book deal with St. Martin's, which is the publisher that publishes my Shane Scullys, and those will both be Shane. So I'm very excited about continuing on with his adventures and his wife Alexa, and this book was just something that I tried to do to as I say, to sort of shake up my creative process and keep myself fresh, and I thought it was a really good attempt at doing that.
I love it. It's called At First Sight, a novel about obsession, Stephen J. Cannell, and again, it's from Vanguard Press. And just one quick question. You mentioned how it flowed right out, and I understand that I'm a writer as well. But when you're doing the Shane Scully series and you have contracts and you have to get books out by certain times, does the pressure and stress at all ever sometimes slow down the writing process?
No, you know what? It's funny. There are writers who have that problem and who are panicked by deadlines, and there are writers who don't. Now, you can't exist for 30 years in the television business if you're afraid of a deadline. You know, I used to have 6 shows on the air. I had 6 episodes of television. I had to be out of my shop every week, and they were all shows that I created and was producing and was actually doing through my own studio. And so I would sit down, and people would come to me on a Friday and say, we need a first draft of something on Monday morning. Can you get it out for us? And under that kind of pressure, I would write an episode of Hunter or an episode of 21 Jump Street or The Commish or Wise Guy or whatever it was, you know, with 4 days as a deadline, and I would always hit the finish line with the script in my hand. So, you know, I am not panicked by deadlines. I throw the deadline over my shoulder. I know it's there, but I don't pay any attention to it. I just write for 5 hours or 5.5 hours every day and get 15 pages. And I usually could write a TV script in 4 days, and so I'm lucky in that I don't have that problem of being panicked by a deadline. I used to have writers under contract in my studio that were, and you could see how frightened they were by the deadline. But you know, I'm not one of those.
Well, Stephen, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and again. Folks, you can get the book. It's available at bookstores right now. It's At First Sight. It's a great novel. I loved it. And good luck. Continue good luck. And hopefully we can talk to you one day about the movie.
Oh, I hope so too, Mark. And thanks for helping me out with this.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.